The standard 56002 and the whole suite of standards that are issued now are pretty much the fundamental basis of our entire innovation management system. And the reason for that is the credibility of the ISO, which means really we're tapping into best practice globally. The fact that it's international and we're a global organization, so that I can reach out and have similar approach with multinational parts of our business and our clients. But actually, it's a really well written and good set of principles and documents to base our system on. So I can really easily integrate that with other parts of our system, 9001, in an integrated way. It's got buy-in from my colleagues. As soon as I say that we're using the ISO as the basis, it's pretty difficult for people to argue with me on why wouldn't you use it.
You are listening to The Standard Show, the podcast that brings you the stories behind the standards, with Matthew Childs and Cindy Parakill.
Hello, my name is Matthew Childs and I am with
Cindy Parakill.
Hey, Cindy Parakill, how are you?
Well, as always these days, trying to take the bull by the horns. How about you?
Well, trying to get the ball rolling and get back on track.
Ooh, two for the price of one there. Nice.
I like to provide value for money. Now, that's how are you, but where are you?
Well, I'm back in Geneva now.
Finally, but okay. So where have you been this time?
I was in Abu Dhabi for the 13th WTO Ministerial Conference.
Out there spreading the standards gospel in your normal way?
As usual. Yep, just doing my usual thing. But this time talking about the role of standards and conformity assessment to facilitate trade.
Very good.
And where are you, Matthew Charles?
Well, not Abu Dhabi, not Geneva. No, it's still hold up in Southeast London. That's where
beautiful Southeast London.
Exactly, I should say that. Beautiful. It's not bad today. Now, I should say before we get carried away, welcome to The Standard Show, the podcast that brings you the stories behind the standards. And the voice you heard at the top of the episode was that of John Raines from global engineering management and development company Mott MacDonald, talking about innovation management, the subject of this episode, and more specifically, talking about the international standard ISO 56002, guidance for the establishment, implementation, maintenance, and continual improvement of an innovation management system. And Cindy, we're managing our own little innovation ourselves here too, aren't we? Because I didn't do this interview and you didn't do this interview.
That's right. So on this occasion, we thought that we would hand over the interviewing reins to someone else. And that someone else is innovation management expert and standards maker, Victoria Milne. Victoria has been on the podcast before. Matthew spoke to her on episode 103, all about innovation standards and SMEs. Check it out on the feed. But this time, she has swapped seats from guest to interviewer.
She has. And in a really nice and wide-ranging conversation, Victoria spoke to John all about innovation management at Mott MacDonald and their experiences of using ISO 56002. Before we hear the conversation between them, a reminder that you can rate, review, and subscribe to The Standard Show wherever you get your podcasts. And you can get in touch and find and follow us on social media too. All the details are in the show notes. So with more than 20 years experience in innovation, strategy, design, branding, advertising, and marketing, Victoria Milne leads Tenshi Consulting, an innovation management consultancy. She is also a standards maker, developing standards in design and innovation management, including the ISO 56000 series, International Standards for Innovation Management.
And with extensive experience in digital innovation, corporate venture capital and utilities project delivery, John Raines is innovation manager at Mott MacDonald. And John is a standards maker too, working alongside Victoria on the ISO 56000 series. And as this is the standard show, we made sure that Victoria asked John to tell us all about his standards journey.
Mott MacDonald runs what it calls the Milne Awards, which is a nice coincidence. Victoria started by asking John about the awards and the company's overall approach to innovation.
The company has continued to be innovative from day one, which is 100 years ago. Actually, there's a little story from Marconi, who invented the radio, who actually was introduced to one of our directors about 100 years ago to say, there's this really bright Italian guy, would you mentor him? And actually, one of our directors early days mentored Marconi and helped him develop his power business and the electronics. And actually, that turned and was associated with our early power unit. So really from day one, really involved in latest technology and all of the aspects around that as well. Way before I got involved, the company's developed and invented all kinds of things. So tunnel boring machine in construction was invented by my colleague, Mr. Bartlett, in the 80s. And then more recently, we've really try to systemize innovation so that we can continue to produce that on all of our projects as is required these days. So on the Milner Wharton, it's great. When we met, it was fantastic having a discussion, and we have lots of discussions, of course. But Mr. Milne was Don Milne, who's electronic engineer in the 80s and 90s, and actually invented all kinds of different systems. And so in his honour, we have an annual Milne Innovation Award, which I run, which we invite colleagues to submit their best innovations, and we have a global competition. Actually, we give a fairly substantial prize, and there's a real award still is a physical thing that we hand over, which is good these days, and that celebrates and recognizes innovation and keeps that momentum going on recognizing individuals and the teams that are actually produce these wonderful innovations. The ones actually was about this year was around digital type of things, but in the past it's been about commissioning water pipelines with very limited water and all kinds of things around that. So yeah, so that's the award, and maybe we'll come to it later. But more recently, we've been looking to systemize, as I mentioned, and actually start to use the international standards and bring in into our integrated management systems, a more sustainable approach to innovation to support consistency, but still with that adaptability and flexibility.
Excellent. So kind of take us to when you kind of got to that point to decide, okay, we actually need to get a system here. And, you know, what was going on, you know, kind of in your head, and what led to that point to start this journey to look at a systems approach?
Yeah, I guess for me, I've been in the company for about 15 years now, something like that. And I have the great pleasure of working in projects all around the world and meeting colleagues from all around the world. And it struck me that we have hundreds, if not thousands, of ideas, which are fantastic. Of course, we can't develop them all, but who decides? And do we just let the internal market decide, or the projects, or whatever? And I actually had a chat with our now MD, Kathy Travers, who I just saw yesterday, actually. And I had a chat saying, you know, we've got thousands of fantastic ideas. We need a bit more of an approach to recognize and choose the best ones. And she's basically, as leadership and company, said, yeah, get on with it. Don't, you know, stop complaining or something. What are you going to do about it? I agree. And so she gave me permission to take the lead in that, which I have done, to look at that. So I sort of did a little bit of research first and said, well, you know, define the problem. What are we actually trying to do here? It's not that straightforward, and the cultural piece. And ended up on a course on innovation management, actually, in Germany, where I discovered the international standard, which was being written and drafted in 2018 at the time, and discovered it and yourself and the wonderful team that's developing the standards, and say, this is exactly what I need to have that structured approach. So I basically downloaded the draft of that, said, okay, I need an innovation strategy. I need a systemic approach. I need to have a look at this, and started to craft our international approach on our version one of our international strategy. So that's really the backstory to it.
And at the time, you were looking at other approaches out there. I presume you spread your net quite widely. What was it about the standard that kind of made it, you know, stand out above the others? What was it that maybe just piqued your curiosity about it?
Yeah, I think probably the rigor and credibility of clearly the people who were writing it, and the fact that it was integratable with our existing management systems. This is in the context on the other research was reading about 200 books on the subject from the classic texts and actually saying, these are all different. Nobody has a consistent approach. I'm getting pulled in all kinds of different directions. And the standard with the credibility and the people who are writing it saying this is, you know, simple enough that I think we can bring it into the company, but clearly the rigor that's gone into it to address the key topics around it.
Well, it's great to hear that you finally settled on the standard. But kind of what did you do from there? I mean, how do you go about implementing something like this? Where did you start?
Yes, it's a good question. That, yeah, it is. It is one thing having this lovely written document setting it all out. That if you do all of these things, innovation will happen and value will come out of the end. But yeah, that it is quite a journey. I think I'm still on that journey. Actually, it's you know, we're 5 and a bit years in now from the first implementation. So I think how did I implement it? Carefully, thinking about the structure. And the implementation plan was actually written in parallel and contained within our innovation strategy. So our document called Innovation Strategy has a section on implementation and splits it out into the different stakeholders. I took a three-part approach, really, which is probably top-down, bottom-up, and the middle as well. Recognizing you do need senior leadership or top management buy-in, otherwise there's no point with an initiative of this magnitude. You're really not going to get anywhere. So I had the benefit of having a discussion with our MD, who said just get on with it. So I had my air cover and my sponsorship. I think the company's already recognizing that innovation is of value, so I didn't have too much trouble on the innovation side of things. It was more, you know, really a management stand, isn't that going to stifle it, take the fun out of it, and be rigid. So a lot of work with the top management to sort of shape why it would be of value.
So how exactly did you do that? Because that's often the thing that people their natural response to it is this going to stifle innovation and creativity? Yeah.
So I mean, through discussion with the top management, my personal discussion with our exec team, and actually the presentation of a paper to one of our committees to actually present it, having discussed it offline and in corridors, and this is what I'm thinking of doing, and taking on board those challenges, ended up with a formal presentation by me to our policy committee, as it's called, to say, I'm proposing to that, I'm recommending that we embark on this journey. Do you agree? And so that really take a decision point with everyone around the table, having discussed, and you know, they're a strong team. They gave me some great ideas and just shape that approach. I have to say that's the top down. The bottom up, really, real quickly, was our graduates and things. No problem at all. Like innovation, yes. Where do I sign up? There's never a problem there. But the middle side of the company, and again, maybe come to it later. That was a particular focus area because. That set of people have a really tough job from having to innovate and deliver, to explore and exploit at the same time. And so I spent quite a long time just talking to them about what their needs were as well.
And tell us a little bit more about the process of winning them over. So how have you found, as you've implemented it, has there been a mind shift? Do you see that change happening, or is it kind of a hard fought battle each step of the way?
I think it's a few aspects of doing that. I think genuinely listening to the feedback, listening with a quiet mind, with obvious integrity and intent to absorb the feedback and bring it into thinking, as opposed to just listen and yeah, whatever, but this is what I'm doing. So I think that was crucial. But even before that stage, I would go back to the terminology of what innovation is, and it was very clear, and I was surprised that innovation meant 100 different things to different people. And we're talking different languages here, different countries as well, so it's inevitable. So I think the classic of, is it beyond the R&D? You've got R&D and then innovation, and actually say, no, We're saying innovation is intent to value, and actually our definition is the application of new ideas to realize value. So we're saying it's full end-to-end. And actually, that was my early struggles to say, no, I really think we should define it as full end-to-end. And other people were saying, no, we've got R&D and we've got this bit. So shaping it and getting it, not exact agreement everywhere, but getting enough momentum and tipping point to see how we're defining it. The other thing that really helped was branding. And I spent a long time on taking the framework diagram. I wanted a brand image for people to actually associate and hook onto. And probably spent about 3 or 4 months actually designing with some subtle wording and some graphics and trying to say it's systemic but agile and iterative, and it isn't a linear process, and trying to get those images in, but to a very, very simple image, which turns out to our the way we've done that, and stick with it for at least 3 years, which we've managed to do. And having the conversation around the terminology and the listening and having something on the screen to say, you know, this is the thing that we're talking about, yeah, as an icon that people could do, I think that helped a lot. And now we have the language which we brought into the company that's now stuck very well. And my boss at the time said, you know, when you've got some momentum, it's going to stick because people start replaying the language you say back to them, which is hard because then, yes, rather than saying, we did that, it just keeps still and that's interesting and having a look. But that happened after about a year or so.
Yes, it's a great indicator of the culture shift, that change, when you start to hear that language being played back to you. You also mentioned that your new graduates in the kind of program that you have, you especially involved those members of staff. Tell us a little bit about getting them involved.
I guess a couple of aspects to refer to. One is in our induction program, we have a specific module on innovation, which relates to our innovation strategy. And that's a whole half day in physical workshop around that. So that helps and inducts people into the way of thinking, if you like. So that's really helpful on the language. But in the actual operational system of our innovation process, we decided pretty early on that we wanted the people coming out of university with latest thinking, maybe, to be involved in the early decision making on choosing the right innovations or the best innovations. And so actually our, as we call early career professionals, they're involved in the triaging of the ideas through our system. And they're the first point of contact, not to be administrators, but just to be up to date, maybe a little bit of challenge and bring in their own ideas. And also to have people who might be the project manager or the initiative manager of the idea to get really involved and excited about that aspect as well. And of course, it's a lot of it is their colleagues and friends who are actually submitting. So they're really at the heart of the system and right at the first decision point as we're taking a look at the ideas. And probably maybe just one more point on the connection through to the identifying opportunities and connecting through to strategy, which is really the first aspect of guiding people on what type of innovations and where we should be searching for those ideas and how it connects to generally where the company is going and what our clients need.
That's excellent. There's clearly a kind of a golden thread that I'm picking up from your senior leadership who kind of gave you that autonomy to go out and discover this, and how that's replicated all the way through to your new grads, where you're effectively bringing them into the innovation management system and getting them to do the same. So it's a really, really nice to actually see that work through in a systemic way. And I think it's a key characteristic, wouldn't you say, to be able to go and explore ideas, to exploit those discoveries.
Yeah, it's actively encouraged. And I have to say, before I was leading our innovation system, this is already a cultural aspect of the company where the senior leadership is very, very supportive of the new starters around the company, anyone at any, we call them early career professionals because they might not be in their 20s, they might be in their 30s or 40s, but they're new to the company and they're early in their career. So most of them are coming out of university, but it's actually an inclusive policy to recognize someone new in their career who's taking on that as well. But the senior leadership has always done that since I've joined the company and genuinely recognized that I'm talking to the future leadership of the company, and I'm really going to go and invest in supporting you in your careers. And so really I'm hopping onto that existing culture and enhancing it a little bit. So it was a great environment to be able to do that. And of course it's very good. And some of the my colleagues that I've been speaking to are now leading innovation in their own divisions and units, and they got excited. Some of the courses that I give internally, maybe sometimes someone reaches out to me after and say, you know, I was really interested in that. How can I get involved? I'd like to get really stuck in. And so I'm sort of picking those people out and saying, well, you can lead on this and that one. So that's in that way, we not only engage with the new community each year and coming in from all over different parts of the world, but actually some of those are self-promoting, and we can promote them into leadership positions on innovation around the company as well. And maybe as a final point, we also have our leadership program for Horizons and emerging leadership and senior Evers. There's about four levels, and each of those actually has an innovation module in it as well, which I've been crafting as well. So it really does reinforce through that as people's careers develop.
We've started touching on this systemic nature of your innovation management system, not only kind of culturally, but how it's plugging into your training and development and all of these aspects. But there's also something else that you've done that's quite radical when we think about approaches to innovation management in organizations, when it's often put off to one side. It's not allowed to have the systemic nature throughout the organization. It kind of sits in a separate building. It might have the foosball tables and the artificial grass and things like that. But you've taken an approach with regards to your actual operating model and your innovation management. Can you tell us a little bit about what you've done there and kind of the thinking behind it?
The overarching thinking for that, how we operationalized it in the operating model, I guess comes from the principles from the standard, the principle fours, talking really about the cultural side and how you need to blend the inspiration and the early side with the effective execution. So that was always in mind around that, or explore and exploit and how you blend that. In the first iteration of the strategy, I went very much with our technical practices, as we call them, which kind of a horizontal organizational structure across the company, which was great at the inspirational side and the new ideas, but wasn't so good at the execution and getting our ideas developed and through into projects. So actually in our second iteration, I flipped that, and I went vertically through the organizational structure, but also purposefully gave a lot of autonomy to the business units and the divisions, and actually split out the strategy into two levels. So that was where we had a global innovation strategy, very light touch, which reflected the ISO and the main aspects, and took on board how we were investing, what kind of intent and which particular subjects that we're looking at, with a little bit of guidance, but actually as a level down from that, setting multiple innovation plans, which referred to the overall innovation strategy, but set their plans in their local context. And that gave a lot more ownership and a lot more flexibility and a lot more context to the local clients and their level of maturity and the competency of the teams as well. And that made a big change. So we had the benefit of here's generally how you should innovate, best practice and some guidance and direction, but then link the actual plan to the context and their ownership. So now we have what we call technical excellence leaders, and we have about 40 individual plans, which are very flexible, and they can, you know, I suggest what should be in them, but they decide, they own it, and they evolve it. And I think that was a real benefit and real step change in it in our journey to look at that.
Well, it's created a high degree of adaptability, wouldn't you say, in how the structure is able to take on new challenges, respond to the market. It gives you a lot more resiliency, I would say, especially when you've got times of crisis where things are kind of moving at pace, new technologies coming on board and that sort of thing.
Yeah, it does. And it's really taking the 8 principles from the ISO and putting them into practice on that implementation. So they're all set out. So they're all right in front of me. It's putting them into that place. So we're probably bringing on board multiple principles in, going back to your early question, how do we implement? I hadn't really thought about it like that, but probably taking a few principles and building up to the full 8. And you're right, that does give us a lot of adaptability and resilience around that. The other thing it gives us is great practice developed locally, which of course we can feed back on our management system review, and people are taking the process and they're, you know, challenging what I've set up and saying, well, actually in our context, we're doing it this way. We're having different people decide, or we're going externally with open innovation or something, and that can then feed back to the master system or the global innovation strategy. Not to completely change it and say that's best practice and roll that out everywhere, because it has to be in the context of that client group, language, culture of the country, but just to maybe offer it out to some of the other plans and tweak it. And then kind of every 3 years we do a refresh, and I'm just in the process of doing that now on our strategy. So yeah, the adaptability, but it also gives us best practice to and some, you know, amazing things that I and our team would never have thought of. So yeah.
Do you want to help make people's lives easier, safer, and more enjoyable? Well, why not become a standards maker and have your say on the development of standards? Standards affect all of us every day, wherever we go, whatever we do. By defining good practice, they help people and organizations to do things better. Each year, standards bodies publish thousands of standards, and we are looking for more people like you to join our community of standards makers. We welcome applicants from all fields, backgrounds, and career stages. Our goal is a simple one: to have a balance of views around the table. By becoming a standards maker, you could help to improve the way things are made and done, like creating healthier and more inclusive workplaces, developing higher quality healthcare systems, making advances in AI governance, or accelerating climate action, and many, many others. So, if you want to make a difference and shape the world through standards, start your standards making journey now. Details of how to do so are in the show notes.
The interesting aspect for me is just how close to the coalface you've put innovation. How has that worked, and how have you found response from clients? Are you speaking to clients about your innovation management system? Because it's right there. What's really happening in that moment?
I mean, we're a projects business as a primary engineering consultancy on that side of things, and the management and development side, and so the vast majority of our time is working with clients across pretty much everybody in the company. So that's our clients' needs significantly affect those innovation plans and what they're wanting to do. So yes, we're working hand in hand. There's a variety. We work on joint ventures for 5 or 10 year programs, and with those type of projects, maybe with energy or water companies, there are specific plans that they want us to work with, and those are done in collaboration on specific subjects, maybe for sustainability or environmental benefit or pollution control, that type of thing. There are other areas, and on in the first strategy, I specifically added the action to set up an innovation advisory group to work with our clients and actually take on board some of our learning and maybe offer that out to our clients to say, well, here's our learnings, maybe it can help you as well. But the other reason for doing that is to make sure that the innovation strategy and the operationalization of that had a revenue and an income, and was not seen completely as an overhead to protect it. And actually, we'll test the value. So that was a purposeful choice, not just for revenue, but actually there's a feedback loop between that external advice and how we bring that in. But I think overall, the element that where we work closely with the client is probably in the search areas, or the intent and the actual challenges and problems and opportunity, the shaping of those. They tend to be our clients' problems that we are bringing on board into our plans, and then trying to solve those problems through our projects as well. So it's that intent area. And we also we're running round tables in various parts of the world, trying to ask what is the specifics of the problems you're trying to solve, and how can we work with you to solve those as well, including the language and shaping the language in our clients in the way that they would like it to be described as well.
It's really powerful the fact that you've placed innovation right at that point where it does need to answer for itself. It has to, you know, it has to produce value. It's not, you know, a separate cost center, as you've said, but you want to see it perform. And I think that's one of the unique characteristics of your implementation that make it stand out. And it's really interesting to start to see, and I have to tell our listeners that I've been very fortunate to be able to research Mott MacDonald and to spend some time with John and his team to see just how this has all come about. But what I want to talk about now is some of the impact that you've actually seen. You know, early days, like you've said, you've had only two iterations of your strategy. But tell us a little bit about some of the impact that you're seeing. And when I say impact, we're probably talking more about kind of early stage outcomes and output. But what have you seen?
Yeah, I think... Yeah, and our team, I have to say, enjoys working with you as well in all of the interview, because it makes us think, and all of the questioning on the side of that, blending the art and the science of it. So thanks. I guess I would split it into three areas, and it's important to keep these three areas in mind when we're talking about the benefits and through to outputs, outcomes, and ultimately impact, which is the benefits to our own company, then the benefits to clients, and then the benefits to society, right through to the SDGs with my little badge here. And having that in mind, if the best innovations for us will actually produce an impact to all three, so we can make a reasonable return, which is fine. We're a business. It's okay to make a reasonable profit. Our clients can be happy, typically on maybe an increase in productivity or some step change benefit. And then through, and given that many of our clients are public bodies as well, that should and often does impact right through to societal change or environmental benefits as well. So those are the three areas that we try and approach. I think tangible things that we've actually done would be starting of completely new services and new business models. So, for example, we have a new digital platform called Moata, which is a completely new business model where our engineering expertise has been taken and encoded into some applications, and those are available for our clients to actually do some engineering design. For example, the design, automatic design and carbon footprinting of a linear structure like a pipeline, where you can literally click on one side and another and it will route the pipeline in the best way around the environmental constraints. All of the hydraulics and engineering aspects are included, and within seconds it will give you a first aspect. So we have tens of applications around that, and that's on a SaaS model, software as a service. So that's a completely new business stream which we've set up from a few years ago. There are probably too many services that I don't even know about all of them. There's that many. So tens of services around the world that have been set up on new ways. Social outcomes springs to mind. So this is a completely new way of identifying the social impact of some project or a similar aspect, and actually what the impact is on the local community and how we can improve that. And then I guess, ultimately, we're doing well commercially as a company. I won't go into the details of it, but we continue to do well and grow as a business. I can't say that's down to our innovation strategy, but it certainly hasn't done our company any harm as we adapt to the new technologies and some of the things that are around there, like the information age and AI and things as well. So maybe as a final example, we're running a pilot with a large software company at the moment on AI, which we have hundreds of people working on that to adapt our ways of working. And actually, how do you work with a cobot? So what is the persona of an online AI system which we're using? How do you ask them the right questions? How do you treat them as a colleague? Should you treat them with respect? There's some real ethical questions around a new type of colleague, which we're now working with right now. And how do you do that? And we're using our innovation management system to work through our program of projects, which is associated with that as well. So I guess the impact is, I'd like to think we have a small but tangible impact through to the SDGs. We have a lot of colleagues who care a lot about that, particularly poverty, education of girls in Africa, and water supply. There are projects we're working on that we get paid for through our clients that have an impact to the world. Our clients are coming back to us on the innovation projects, which is good, and our wider ones, and we're making a reasonable profit off the back of it. So yeah. So it's a sustainable part, the internal and the external part of that.
And internally, you're seeing a shift in kind of how people approach coming up with ideas and innovating. Are you seeing an uplift in the number of ideas? What's kind of happening there? Are you getting more ideas, better quality? What would you say is happening with that aspect of your innovation management?
Yeah, so we've had the benefit of running a system, a digital system on the ideas for about 5 years consistently now. So I've got a pretty good set of data, and we broadly have either somewhere a 50 to 100% increase in number of ideas year on year. So I think last year it was probably a doubling. So definitely a consistent increase of ideas coming into the system. And the way I measure that is actually the ones that go past the first gateway. So it's not just general ideas anyone can put anything on. It's actually ones that are being incubated and real innovation initiatives having been sparked. So yes, we've got an increase in ideas. The quality one is a difficult one to measure, but my subjective measure on that is yes, again, we have more higher quality ones and more investment going into that. We actually probably have less ideas being progressed at that stage, but less of more ideas. And what I've tracked is the amount of funding going in. So we've got a smaller number of ideas with larger funding, which is kind of what you want, because you want the funnel and have a little bit of a focus. I've seen you'd like to think the system works all the time to choose the best ideas. What actually happens is there's some, they build up, and then there's a little bit of a review of multiple ideas. And I've seen step changes in the innovation portfolio where people are clearly making decisions and maybe pausing 50 or 60 in a portfolio around that. So yes, definitely an increase in both, I would say. It's a little bit difficult to measure, but broadly, yes.
Oh, wonderful. That's great to hear. And having spoken to some of your colleagues who are working on your innovation management system standard, it's been incredible to see just how quickly the change has taken place. We mentioned language earlier, but that change in their use of language and in their uptake of how the system works and understanding the system and applying it. So I think it really some great impacts and some great results. But if you look back, you know, hindsight being 2020, are there any things you would do differently? Are there any things that you go, oh, that was a mistake and I wish we hadn't done that?
Yeah, probably quite a few, I would say. I think one of the things that I didn't consider enough was the timing of implementing a very large initiative and valuable one in parallel when other initiatives were going on around the world in different countries, and my own awareness of doing that rather than sort of driving something in and just trying harder. So I think a little bit more style and flexibility in the timing throughout the right year and the right parts of the year in our corporate cycle, I think would have been a little bit better rather than just pushing hard. The other part is that I wish I'd gone to strategy 2 first, which is our distributed model of the operating, which you touched on before, which is having that local ownership. I don't know whether we could have done that with, say, hey, can you do a load of plans, everybody? And maybe you had to go through a natural cycle of a centralized approach first and getting some language before you delegate that out. But I'll never know. And I think probably knowing when to stop pushing. So, you know, so not everywhere in the business is adopting this. I don't want to give the impression that it's completely successful globally and everyone's doing everything. There are some pockets of colleagues who just say, hey, we're not ready for this. This is, you know, we're not up for doing that. Our part of the business. Yes, of course, we're innovating, but we don't really want to take on this additional approach. And I probably could have just backed off a little bit earlier and just say, hey, you know, I'll come back in a year or so, rather than spending too much effort trying to convince people a little bit more. So maybe more listening, as I talked about before, and just realizing that wasn't going. And going with the flow of where the company, where the emphasis and where clearly where there was some engagement and buy-in, and putting more effort into that area and less effort onto the other areas. I have to say they're all pretty much on board now, but it was the way that you do that. And dealing with individuals and respecting their particular jobs and their perception of what you're talking about. You know, there are as I say, different cultures around the world, and even in the same country, of course, we have different aspects of the culture. So navigating through that and the political side of persuading people, but then listening very carefully and adapting to that. Probably those are the main things.
Yeah, I think it's an important point to bear that in mind when implementing, is that there are sensitivities and you do have to take those into account, because we're asking a lot of a workforce who generally have been trained to produce efficiently and not necessarily purely originally, which usually is a little less efficient. And so it does ask for that behavior change and some vulnerability from those who are now taking this on and working in new ways. So it's an important point, but it's very difficult to get right and drive through the change at the same time. So that sensitivity is key. But knowing you and having spoken to people, I think in the main you've got it right there. I also wanted to ask you, not everybody is a Mott MacDonald. And so there'll be people listening to this podcast and they might be a small or medium-sized enterprise. They might be much smaller. And they're going, well, this all sounds great for MacDonald, but how could I make this work for me? And what kind of advice would you have for a smaller business who would be really interested in seeing some of the effects of having a good innovation management system in their business?
Yeah, I think the advice really would be to start with the principles, the 8 principles, and see which ones resonate with you and your leadership team, and pick one or two and work from there outwards. So, for example, I talked about execution and exploitation. Exploring and exploiting as well. What would be the balance like in the company for a startup or a scale up? Then there's a lot of exploring and less exploiting. But what kind of transfer would you want to do that? And how would you retain that culture so as the business is successful and grows, you don't lose that exploration side, which is the key part. So yeah, I'd look at the principles, work from there, reach out to some of the experts who may be able to help around this kind of area. I think on the, you know, there is some evidence that valuations of companies and ESG aspects and innovation capability and capacity is being looked at by funders as well. So having a route through to the ISO, awareness of the ISO, maybe the principles wouldn't take too long. Probably a good thing to say to people who are interested in investing in the company as well, maybe.
Yeah, I think what it does help to achieve is constant innovation wins, so that you lower that failure rate and that you're able to see more of your innovation achieve value, which for us is the success that we're looking for. Now, we actually get to also write the standard together, because not only have you found out all about 56,000 and the suite of innovation management system standard guidances, but you've actually got yourself involved in writing standards, which is fabulous. You joined the BSI committee, which we're both on, and now you're working right in the thick of it with the ISO, our technical committee 279. And so tell us a little bit about what it's like for John Raines working in writing standards and kind of what you love about it.
Yeah, I'm not sure I should be thanking you for inviting me into that forum as well. I think ultimately it was a great honor to be invited by yourself and colleagues to be serious about it, to recognize there's something that I could add that might help people around the world and hopefully for many decades. So that's the first thing I would say. I guess it's a combination of a great responsibility to get it right, and it could be quite impactful, but extremely challenging at the same time, through understanding multiple perspectives from different countries at the same time. It's the ultimate in your listening skills, I think, through people who don't have English as a first language. And so you have to listen very, very carefully to what their intent and where they're coming from. And they all have really, really good points. Things I've never thought of before. Like, that's a great point, John, to suggest that, but that word doesn't translate into my language. Never thought about that before. And so that personal adaptability to get the intent of the point and putting that into the standard whilst really taking on board multiple positions and not watering it down to something that doesn't mean something. So lots of persuasive skills and listening. So yeah, so I've learned a huge amount, made a few new friends around the world as well, learned that there's a lot of people really wanting to do good in the world, which is tremendously heartwarming, actually, to see the intent of the people who genuinely want to make a little bit of difference around this, particularly in the circumstances in the world at the moment as well, and sort of coming together from multiple countries. So my feeling is a responsibility. I'm very happy to try and give back something of the learning, but then thinking about, our company is pretty unique. It won't always apply my learning. And how do you translate that into the context of different companies to your questions on startups or different areas as well? So very pleased to be involved. And there's a lot of work to do, and invite our listeners here maybe to contact and get involved and comment on how shape the documentation and the standards to add value for businesses, because it really has to be a cohort of multiple people and our, ultimately our customers to the standards, really.
Our thanks to Victoria Milne and John Raines for their conversation about innovation management, and to Victoria for being our guest interviewer, our latest bit of innovation here on The Standard Show. Now, if you want to discover more about standards and innovation management and ISO 56002 in particular, and how to get involved in standards, just like Victoria and John, then check out the links in the show notes. And a reminder that the show notes are also where you can find details of our socials and all of the other ways to get in touch with us here on The Standard Show.
You have been listening to an episode of The Standard Show, the podcast that brings you the stories behind the standards, with Matthew Childs and Cindy Paragill.
You just heard a Stripped Media production.